morning. My name is Michael McCusker. We just couldn't do it. America, with a K. We were unable to elect a woman to be president of the USA. A woman of color, quote unquote. And so instead chose a viperous dictator who had already disgraced American democracy and will most likely once again debase liberty and justice for all into a warped caricature, if not a downright farce. The hounds of fascism have once more been unleashed with a vengeance. I start today's program with an article from The Guardian by David Smith. Fear triumphs over hope as Trump wins the presidency. How did it happen? To elect Donald Trump once may be regarded as a misfortune. To elect him twice looks like craziness. Sometimes fear triumphs over hope. Donald Trump's shocking victory in the 2016 U.S. presidential election was described as a leap into the political unknown. This time there is no excuse. America knew that he was a convicted criminal, serial liar, and racist demagogue who 4 years ago attempted to overthrow the government. It voted for him anyway. The result is a catastrophe for the world. It saw Kamala Harris's competence and expertise, her decency and grace, her potential to be the first female president in America's history. It also saw Trump's venality and vulgarity, his crass insults and crude populism, his dehumanization of immigrants that echoed Adolf Hitler. And the world asked, how is this race even close? But elections hold up a mirror to a nation, and the nation does not always like what it sees. Future historians will marvel at how Trump rose from the political dead. When he lost the 2020 election to Joe Biden, people gathered outside the White House to celebrate, brandishing signs that said, "Bon voyage, democracy wins, you're fired. Trump is over and loser." There was a tone of finality, a sense that after 4 grueling years, this particular national nightmare was over. For many, there was the comforting idea that moral order had been restored. It was Trump who was the aberration, not Barack Obama, the first black president who had preceded him. Hope, not fear, was the national default. Now America was back on course after its unfortunate zigzag of history. Then came Trump's ultimate disgrace, the deadly insurrection at the U.S. Capitol on 6 January 2021. He seemed at peace with the idea that his own vice president, Mike Pence, might be hanged by the rampaging mob. He had finally gone too far. "Count me out," Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, once a devout Trump loyalist, said in an impassioned speech on the Senate floor. But the political obituary writers forgot that 78-year-old Trump is the luckiest man in the world. A series of opportunities to snuff out his political career, banishing him to golf courses in Florida for the rest of his days, were squandered. Trump was impeached for the second time by the House of Representatives. At his Senate trial, Republican leader Mitch McConnell, who has called Trump stupid and despicable, could have instructed his colleagues to convict, barring him from ever running the office again. But McConnell choked, and Trump was acquitted. Trump immediately began regathering political strength. Representative Kevin McCarthy, who had initially denounced him, made a pilgrimage to Mar-a-Lago and bowed the knee. From that moment on, it was clear that the Republican Party was still the Trump Party. Not even electoral defeat and its violent aftermath could break the fever. Trump failed again at the ballot box in the 2022 midterms, throwing his weight behind a parade of grotesques and misfits who lost winnable races. Again, there was a shaft of light, a moment when Republicans could have course-corrected, but would-be challengers such as Ron DeSantis and Nikki Haley were steamrolled by the Make America Great Again, quote-unquote, movement. Trump got lucky again on 13 July this year when a would-be assassin's bullet struck him in the ear at a campaign rally in Butler, Pennsylvania. A last-second tilt of the head to look at a chart showing immigration figures spared his life. A photo of Trump standing with blood streaked across his face as he raised his fist and shouted, "Fight!" became the indelible image of his campaign. Still, the man who lost his first popular vote by 3 million and his second by 7 million had to convince America that he was worth a second look. His next stroke of good fortune was to be initially up against Biden, an incumbent even older than himself, who was given little reward by voters for his significant legislative and economic achievements. In the 108 days since Kamala Harris's sudden ascent to the top of the Democratic ticket, she has carried the fears of tens of millions of Americans deeply afraid of a second Trump presidency. The stakes were exceedingly high, she acknowledged, agreeing at one point that her opponent met the definition of a fascist, but she promised a future unbound by the fear and anxiety of the Trump era. "It doesn't have to be this way," Harris said in her closing argument from Grassy Ellipse near the White House, a backdrop meant to underline both the threat of a Trump second term and the potential of a future Harris administration. Her audaciously joyful campaign unleashed a wave of pent-up excitement among Democratic-leaning voters, especially women. She had raised $1 billion. She has centered abortion rights, framing it as a matter of bodily autonomy. She attracted high-energy crowds and endorsements from the planet's biggest stars. And yet, for its entirety, the race remained excruciatingly, nail-bitingly close. As Trump pulled to an expected early lead Tuesday evening, jitters set in. But this was a crowd predisposed to worry. In the shadow of Clinton's 2016 loss, an upset that stunned the scores of women who had assembled at her glass-ceilinged election night party in New York, and covered the grave of Susan B. Anthony in "I voted" stickers, few Democrats allowed themselves to feel anything more than nauseously optimistic, quote-unquote, about Harris's prospects. Rhonda Green, 55, of Virginia, recalled waking up on the Wednesday morning after the 2016 election, confident the U.S. had elected a female president. Then I looked at the TV, and I was in a state of shock for at least a week, she said. I can't even imagine. I won't even allow my mind to go there. After all, so much has changed since then. Trump's presidency sparked an extraordinary backlash, and women marched en masse across the country. Democratic-leaning women ran for office in record numbers, and many of them won. And then the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in 2022, igniting women of all ideological persuasions. fury over the loss of federal abortion rights again helped power Democrats fend off a red wave in 2022 and saw conservative states act to protect access. Harris's candidacy, while unexpected, seemed like the natural progression. To see a woman become president, I'm like, I can do anything after that, said Chelsea Chambers, a sophomore at Howard, arriving at the yard where the Frederick Douglass Memorial Hall was illuminated and the stage set for the vice president to speak. But perhaps a lesson from 2016. There were no flashy displays of confidence at Harris's election night party. No glass ceiling. It was outdoors at her alma mater, the place where she won her first election, freshman class representative of the Liberal Arts Student Council. Many Howard students and alumni were in attendance to support Harris, who would be the first president to have graduated from HBCU, historically black colleges and universities. As the evening wore on and Trump pulled further ahead in the electoral college count, her apprehensive supporters found solace in a handful of bright spots. Angela Alsobrooks was elected to be the first black female senator to represent Maryland. Cheers rang out when Harris won her home state of California, hardly a surprise, but a boost that brought her tally to 145 against Trump's 211. Attenders refreshed their phones, staring at a probability needle that increasingly pointed irrevocably toward Trump victory. The loss of North Carolina, the first of the seven battleground states to be called for Trump, brought almost no audible reaction from the crowd. There was no raucous booing, just nervous sighs and scattered groans. As the mood darkened at the event, the sound on the TVs were eventually switched off, and music began to play. Tupac's California Love came on. The vibes were no longer good. Attendees began to filter out. Some debated whether to stay in hopes of hearing from the vice president herself. But when it became clear she would not speak, there was a rush toward the exit. The blue wall states had not been called yet, and that was always what the Harris campaign saw as the clearest path to victory. With those contests outstanding, John A. Smith, an alumna of Howard, who flew in from Atlanta with the hope of witnessing history on the campus of her alma mater, said she had not yet given up hope. But, she conceded, I am a bit let down by my nation that this is even close. Both Harris and Trump had framed the election as an existential battle for the country's future and its very democracy. And given the choice between electing the first female president or returning to power the twice impeached former president whose attempts to overturn his 2020 election defeat led to an insurrection at the U.S. Capitol and who would become the first convicted felon commander-in-chief, Americans chose him again. And also from The Guardian, Trump's election victory throws uncertainty into legal cases he faces. Donald Trump's victory over Kamala Harris immediately spurred questions about the viability of the various criminal cases against him, including whether he will be sentenced as planned this month and whether he could pardon himself. Trump, who was found guilty of 34 felony counts this May and will become the first U.S. president with a criminal record, also faces charges in other state and federal courts for his apparent efforts to disrupt the electoral process and hoard classified documents. The president-elect also faces hundreds of millions of penalties in civil cases for sexual abuse, defamation, and fraud. Trump's delay-based legal strategy which has proved highly successful for him, would mean he avoids punishment and jail in his New York City criminal hush money case. After the trial and guilty verdict, Trump was initially scheduled to be sentenced in July, then in September. Trump's lawyers then asked the judge, Juan Merchan, for a postponement this summer so he could weigh the U.S. Supreme Court decision that granted broad immunity on former presidents for official acts in office. The decision held that unofficial acts carry no immunity, and his New York trial was largely focused on his 2016 efforts to bury negative stories about an alleged sexual encounter with an adult film star, which happened before his time in the White House. Some of the prosecution evidence at trial, however, involved personal actions Trump took during his presidency, and in September, Merchan decided to delay Trump's scheduled sentencing that month until 26 November, after the election. He said he agreed to push back the proceeding, quote, to avoid any appearance, however unwarranted, that the proceeding had been affected by or seeks to affect the approaching presidential election in which the defendant is a candidate, unquote. Merchan also said he would issue his presidential immunity decision on 12 November, which could well render the sentencing moot should he rule in favor of Trump. U.S. presidents have the power to pardon any federal criminal charges, and some legal scholars believe that also includes self-pardoning. Pardon power does not apply to state cases, however, so Trump cannot pardon himself for the felonies. But the chance of him now being sentenced in Manhattan is thin, even if the case survives his presidential immunity claim. As Politico pointed out, Trump's lawyers are all but guaranteed to claim that he should not return to court during the presidential transition. It adds that in the seemingly unlikely event that Merchan does sentence Trump to incarceration, it is unlikely he would serve a day behind bars until his term as president wraps in 2029. The same is probably true if he is sentenced to community service or home confinement, given that his lawyers are poised to argue that a would-be or sitting president should not serve a sentence, Politico noted. Trump faces several other criminal charges. In Fulton County, Georgia, he is charged over attempts to subvert the 2020 election. That case remains on hold, pending appeal after a scandal involving the district attorney, Fannie Willis, apparently hiring the man with whom she had an affair to be one of the prosecutors. Trump also faces federal election interference charges in Washington, D.C. Another case against him, alleging that he illegally retained top-secret government documents after leaving the White House, was thrown out in South Florida after the judge, Eileen Cannon, a Trump appointee, cited the Supreme Court decision. Prosecutors are appealing. The Justice Department has long maintained that a sitting president cannot be prosecuted, and the president appoints the attorney general, who heads the Justice Department and drives what prosecution it pursues or abandons. The attorney general also presides over the appointment of special counsels. Joe Biden's attorney general, Merrick Garland, in 2022 appointed Jack Smith as special counsel in the federal cases against Trump. Trump has said he would fire Smith, quote, within 2 seconds, unquote. On Wednesday morning, as the results of the election appeared to have tipped decisively in Trump's favor, the Senator Lindsey Graham, a Trump loyalist, expressed a similar sentiment, writing in a social media post addressed to Smith and his team, quote, it is time to look forward to a new chapter in your legal careers as these politically motivated charges against President Trump hit a wall. The Supreme Court substantially rejected what you were trying to do, and after tonight, it's clear the American people are tired of lawfare. Bring these cases to an end. The American people deserve a refund, unquote. And that was Lindsey Graham. As for the civil cases against him, Trump's return to the White House does not provide the same level of protection. In the case of Clinton versus Jones, the Supreme Court ruled that a sitting president can be sued, allowing Paula Jones' federal sexual harassment lawsuit against Bill Clinton to proceed while Clinton remained president. Trump is appealing decisions in his sexual abuse and financial fraud civil suits. And that was Fear Triumphs Over Hope as Trump Wins the Presidency. How did it happen? And now, by Robert Reich. A peaceful but determined resistance to Trump must start now. I still have faith in America, but we must mobilize to protect those at risk if Trump achieves his worst impulses. I won't try to hide it. I'm heartbroken. Heartbroken and scared, to tell you the truth. I'm sure many of you are also. Donald Trump has decisively won the presidency, the Senate, and possibly the House of Representatives and the popular vote also. I still have faith in America, but right now that's little comfort to the people who are most at risk. Millions of people must now live in fear of being swept away by Trump's cruel mass deportation plan, documented immigrants, as he has threatened before, as well as undocumented, and millions of American citizens with undocumented parents or spouses. Women and girls must now fear that they will be forced to give birth or be denied life-saving care during an ectopic pregnancy or miscarriage. America has become less safe for trans people, including trans kids, who are already at risk of violence and discrimination. Anyone who has already faced prejudices and marginalization is now in greater danger than before. Also in danger are people who have stood up to Trump, who has promised to seek revenge against his political opponents. Countless people are now endangered on a scale and intensity almost unheard of in modern America. Our first responsibility is to protect all those who are in harm's way. We will do that by resisting Trump's attempts to suppress women's freedoms. We will fight for the rights of women and girls to determine when and whether they have children. No one will force a woman to give birth. We will block Trump's cruel efforts at mass deportation. We will fight to give sanctuary to productive, law-abiding members of our communities, including young people who arrived here as babies or children. We will not allow mass arrests and mass detention of anyone in America. We will not permit families to be separated. We will not allow the military to be used to intimidate and subjugate anyone in this country. We will protect trans people and everyone else who is scapegoated because of how they look or what they believe. No one should have to be ashamed of who they are. We will stop Trump's efforts to retaliate against his perceived enemies. A free nation protects political dissent. A democracy needs people willing to stand up to tyranny. How will we conduct this resistance? By organizing, by fighting through the courts, by arguing our cause through the media. We will ask other Americans to join us, left and right, progressive and conservative, white people and people of color. It will be the largest and most powerful resistance since the American Revolution. It will be peaceful. We will not succumb to violence, which would only give Trump and his regime an excuse to use organized violence against us. We will keep alive the flames of freedom and the common good, and we will preserve our democracy. We will fight for the same things Americans have fought for since the founding of our nation, rights enshrined in the Constitution and Bill of Rights. The preamble to the Constitution of the United States opens with the phrase, "We the people," conveying a sense of shared intent, interest, and a desire, quote, to promote the general welfare, unquote, as the preamble. We will resist Donald Trump's tyranny. Although peaceful and nonviolent, the resistance will nonetheless be committed and determined. It will encompass every community in America. It will endure as long as necessary. We will never give up on America. The resistance starts now. And that was by Robert Reich, a former U.S. Secretary of Labor, a professor of public policy at the University of California, Berkeley, and the author of Saving Capitalism for the Many, Not the Few, and the Common Good. His newest book, The System Who Rigged It, How We Fix It, is out now. He is a Guardian U.S. columnist. And this is Michael McCusker. Joanne Rideout is engineer of this program. I wish to pay my respects and deep sorrow at the recent deaths of two persons I have long regarded as superb human beings, Belinda Kruger and Paul Vandervelt. Each was a person I deeply respected and admired. Both were distinguished and notable historians.
You've been listening to A Story Told on KMUN, featuring Michael McCusker, journalist, activist, former firefighter, and Vietnam veteran. Michael has been sharing essays and poetry on A Story Told since 1987. For 30 years, he published the North Coast Times-Eagle newspaper out of his home in Astoria, Oregon. Michael currently shares his work and the works of other authors from his home on the Central Oregon coast. Join us here next week for A Story Told.